So we talked about there being four of us in the digs, and come the end of the first year, of course, you've made more friends in other areas. So Phil Banks, who's the lad I shared a room with, and the pair of us have met another couple of guys. One was a geologist and then one was a friend of his. So you end up with the four of you knocking around together. So the other two, Paul and Nigel. The four of us moved out to Bow Street, which is a separate village outside of Aber altogether. One which caught a few people out who've organised their digs in Bow Street thinking it was in the middle of Aber and then found that they'd actually got a commute into town. So no, we knew from the start we'd got this little Welsh cottage. So it's all part of the, almost like the fairy story, if you like, the magic of Wales and a little Welsh cottage. All the doors were very low. So for the first few weeks, I got a permanent dent across the bridge of my nose for walking into these door frames. And then I developed a twitch where every time I approached any door, I automatically put my head on one side to get under it, even if it was a very tall door. So that was good fun. That was whilst we were there. Of course, you have all the usual. I'd got a car. Got a car. I had a Morris 1000 van, which I used to get into college. Phil had a Morris 1000 saloon in purple. I don't think Nigel ever had a vehicle there. And partway through, Paul got a Hillman, quite a large one, but it was a disaster. It was one he should never have bought, and it sort of got home and then fell apart in front of the front door. So you got all these to-dos of trying to keep these vehicles going so you could get back into town. And then in the last year, the four of us moved into digs on the top of Penglais because all our lectures were on Penglais. So we didn't have either the drive in from Bow Street or the walk up from down at the bottom of town all the way up Penglais 2 and 3 times a day. I can't understand why we were fit in those days. It was So yeah, last year was in digs in Cwt Mawr. So graduated from there, went home. I was going to go to Birmingham to do a master's, but you just got to the phase where you realise being at home, living at home with your mum and dad is not half as exciting as it was being by yourself in college with all your mates. And I got a phone call out of the blue from a bloke who worked with Usk River Division, which was part of the then Welsh National Water Development Authority. What I hadn't appreciated was that the whole water industry, we're talking now in June 94, June 74, sorry. What I hadn't appreciated was that the whole water industry had been reorganised in April 74. So you'd had river authorities before, and you'd had water boards, and the sewage and sewerage had always been looked after by the town councils. Well, all these were pulled together in one group and now called into water authorities. So what had previously been the Usk River Authority became the Usk River Division of the Welsh National Water Development Authority. And then bits of like Newport Water Board became part of Gwent Water Division, and you got the same with Mon and South Brecks. Water Board became part of Gwent Water Division. And of course, when they created all this new management structure, there'd been the opportunity for lots of people either to retire or to move up a level. And when they'd moved up a level, of course, it had left a whole raft of vacancies at the bottom level and nobody coming through to fill them. So the laddie who'd inherited effectively the water resources job in the Usk River Division, had been probably one of the most junior members of staff up to a few weeks before everybody else had either left or been promoted. So he was looking for staff to come and work with him. So he got in touch with ABBA, the university, and said, can you give me the contact details for the people who did your hydrology course? And I think I might have been second on the list. And the guy who was first on the list wasn't in that afternoon when he rang up. So it was simple as, I've got a project that needs doing. It'll be about 5 or 6 weeks. Do you fancy coming doing it? You know, so I said, yeah, that sounds all right. South Wales. I know a lot of people in South Wales, don't I? So this would be good. I'm getting bored at home. Good excuse to leave mum and dad. You know, look at the potential work experience here, mum and dad, you know. So off I went for 6 weeks and stayed for 32 years. So, I mean, initially, it was a very good mini apprenticeship, because they put me in, a lot of their technical people had still stayed, so they got a lot of experienced field staff. So they introduced me to a lot of the field work in terms of river flow gauging and all the calculation of stage discharge relationships and flow duration curves and what have you. All these things that just become second knowledge after a while. And it's working in this part of Wales again. The Newport end of things was quite rough. You're amongst the industrial areas, and you're up and down the Lewyd Valley and what have you. And the first flow measurement, I went out with one of the gauging assistants, and you have a current meter which is measuring the speed of flow down the speed of the river. So you put it in, and all you're measuring is how fast the water is flowing at that point. And because you measure the width of the river and because you measure the depth of it, you divide it into panels which you treat as rectangles, and you say that rectangle is moving at this speed, the next one is moving at that speed, and you summate the whole group, and you could say the cross-sectional area is moving at an average speed of whatever, so the flow is cubic metres per second. Yeah. So you're standing in the river in your waders, and you put your... And then suddenly the river turns black. And you're thinking, what on earth's going on? And there's a bloke, Ted Broben. Not the sharpest tool in the box. Very knowledgeable with the job he did, but not the sharpest tool. And not a born conversationalist either. So it's, Ted, what? Why's the river gone black? Huh? Why's the river gone black? Oh, that'll be the washery at coal mine. All right. See you, right. 60 seconds is up. Move on to the next one. 60 seconds is up. Move on to the next one. The river turns red. Ted? What? Oh, that'll be the dye washery at Pontypool. And we didn't quite go through the colours of the rainbow, but we must have had 4 or 5 different colour changes. And each of them were industrial effluents just being poured into the river. And it's going black, it's going red, it's going blue, it's going whatever. And you're thinking, well, that's... And of course, there's no river life left in there. It's all completely just dead, because it can't live amongst that sort of environment. And you go back to the office, to the river division office, where there are pollution departments, and you say, is that legitimate? And they say, sadly, yes. Specific exemption for the coal washeries. We understand the colour thing, but their discharge is within the limits that were set historically. There's nothing we can do about that, and so on. And the story goes a full cycle that by the time I'm leaving, well, perhaps a few years before I've left, I can remember the then Environment Agency were cheering that they had got life back in the bottom of the Lewid. And we say, well, how have you achieved that then? Oh, well, we've been doing special things here. And they'd done nothing. The coal mine had shut, so the washery had closed down. ICI at Pontypool had closed down, so they were no longer. And that's what had happened. The heavy industry had gone. So all these things that had been polluting the Lewid for all these years had just packed up and gone, and the Lewid had returned to something like a natural river. And fish had reappeared, and the macrophytes and what have you, they'd all returned. So, yeah. So I was there in 1974. They kept extending this contract by about 6 weeks at a time, which was pretty hairy as an existence, because as soon as you got one contract, you were never sure that you were going to be there at the end of the month almost. But they also realised that we got all these youngsters coming in at the bottom, and there were some new systems coming through that they needed to implement. So each of the river divisions, and there were seven within Wales, was going to get a data officer to look after these systems. And the one in Wye Division, based in Hereford, got theirs first. Now, one of the other attractions for going down to Usk, which was based in Caerleon, was the laddie who'd phoned me up was also a cricketer. And he said, "You don't by any chance play cricket?" I said, "Oh, yes, I do play a bit of cricket." So he said, "Well, fetch your kit down then, because we play a works team. So, if you're any, then you can come and join us." The laddie in Hereford was also a cricketer. So there was an Usk-Wye cricket match. On a routine basis. So I'd met Ian Fox when we'd had some of these cricket matches. And whilst I would have liked to have stayed in South Wales, they couldn't get their post through for advertising, whereas the one in Hereford could. So I applied for that, and I was fortunate enough to get it at the end of 1975. So on January the 1st, 1976, then I came to Herefordshire. I mean, Welsh Water has been through so many iterations, and I mean, I've been offered jobs in South Wales and what have you, but Jan had developed a business that was up here, and we said, we're actually more confident in Jan continuing to be in one place than we are with Welsh Water. So I've carried on here and commuted to wherever they wanted, and it's worked from there. So yeah, the first lot was with regards to flow measurement, rainfall measurement, climate measurement generally. You would class that as hydrometric technician, and then from the I've explained about measuring the way, so we can say that on this day, at this time, with that river level, that is the amount of flow that you've got. If you repeat that at different river levels, you can end up with a stage di to discharge relationship. So you can create that as an equation, and then you can just turn all the level measurements into flow measurements. So associated with gauging places, you would also have instrumentation for measuring level, and you're processing that data into flows. So that all became part and parcel of it, producing a flow record. Once I've moved up to Herefordshire and we did the data officer business, that was looking at bigger systems. So Welsh Water was then, as a whole thing with water divisions and sewage divisions and what have you, was trying to say, look, we've got all sorts of stuff everywhere. Can we try and interrelate it? So you created a network of the river, and you could hang abstraction licenses on where they took from the river. You could hang discharge consents where they discharged into a river. You could hang storm overflow locations into where they were. And this is long before we've had anything like a laptop. You know, we're still on mainframe punch card type of big paper printout computing here. But it was a way of trying to hold this information together. So fisheries information, where salmon cut reds each year, you could identify where their like breeding spots were. Where fish traps had been found, you know, that was another issue. So that became one. That was one group, and then as time had gone on, I mean, I must have done that for a couple of years, and then somebody else left, and I thought, well, I can move sideways here in this. So I took over more of the abstraction licensing and back to river flows and what have you for a while. And then there was yet another reorganisation, so I took over the department in Hereford for the Wye catchment. Then we got to privatisation, and so all the water resources people either went into the privatised water industry or went into the what was then the National Rivers Authority, and a lot of them went that way. I wasn't getting on with a number of them that went into the NRA, so moving into Welsh Water was fine by me. So I took over South East Division after that. So it was the Wye and the Usk and Glamorgan, what was Glamorgan River Divisions. And then eventually I took over Wales. Wales excluding the Severn Trent area. Because if you imagine Wales on a map, which is quite sort of rectangular, isn't it? But if you look at it in catchment areas, the River Severn takes a huge bite out of Mid Wales, so that it's not that far above inland from Aberystwyth before you're into rivers that flow eastwards and into England, and the Severn is one of them. So you've got a big chunk of North Wales, a little thin coastal strip down through Aberystwyth and into Ceredigion, and then a big bulge down through South Wales proper.
What was your job titles during this time?
Technician, data officer, assistant hydrologist, water resources manager. Juggling it between what was going where. A lot of integration with the what had been the National Rivers Authority and then became the Environment Agency. Quite broke down on me at the end. Initially, whilst I didn't get on particularly well with some guys who were in the NRA, I got on very well with an awful lot of the others. And we were able to sit across a table and talk sensibly as to how things were operating for us and what their, and I knew what their issues were because I'd been doing that job up until, you know, only months before. So I understood where they were coming from. And they understood where I was coming from because they'd been looking after the public water side of things as well. So we were all on the same wavelength and knew what was happening. But as a few years went on, you got some bright youngsters came in who were very keen to save the whole environment, and you're thinking, oh, dear me, if I could have put you back in that river in the Lewyd in, you know, 1974, and then, you know, then we can talk about saving the river, and whereas they're talking about the Lewyd now in a pristine state and how they're going to improve it, and as a regulator, they became very powerful and very difficult to work with. It was very much a question of this is the way you will do it, even if it cuts across what you're trying to achieve. So we got to yet another reorganisation, and voluntary severance was offered. So I thought, fine, that'll suit me. Get out, and there we were.
And what year was this? How old were
Ooh,
you?
oh, I would have been about 60 at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, time to
go, and you see the youngsters coming through, and you think, yeah, let some other youngsters have a go at it, and I can spend a lot of time arguing with them about it, and they pay me pension straight away, so I find it a very sad time currently with the water industry. In those early years after privatisation, and there was a lot of finger pointing that, oh, you're just going to run it further for profit and what have you. There was still a lot of that retained culture from when you'd been a river authority, that you understood the environment and what they were trying to achieve. And there was still a lot of working along that line. So I can remember the company on the sewage side now, and sewage is one of the things that comes up in the press locally, currently. We're working hand in glove with Surfers Against Sewage. And that was routine, that you were talking to them, and they were part of the celebration photographs when a new treatment works had been able to divert it from all the outfall. You know, the Surfers Against Sewage say, well, that's solved our problem there. And I'm sort of pleased that as I've left, it was still in that sort of place. And the rest has just gone completely pear-shaped. The Environment Agency has collapsed as any sort of regulator. I don't believe they're collecting river information to the river flows. I don't believe they're collecting any of that information to anything like the extent. Water quality information, they're not collecting. They're certainly not pursuing discharges to the extent that they were when I was in the business. So, and then organisations like Ofwat just seem to have washed their hands of any financial control over the industry. So, I'm very glad I'm not part of it at present. Very sad I'm not. Very sad, but very glad I'm not part of it, because the government has been keen on keeping water prices low. The companies have not been able to raise their prices to keep pace with inflation, so they've not been able to make the investments that they should have been doing to keep on top of this, aided by the fact that the Environment Agency are not checking up anymore, so it becomes self-fulfilling. When I worked with in the Water Authority and I was looking after abstraction licences, I got farmers on one side who were wanting more water and fishermen on the other who were arguing that we were taking too much. And I used to reckon that if I were getting the same amount of grief from both of them, I'd probably got it about right. If one of them was not complaining, I've got something wrong there. You know, I've given too much away. You know, what have I missed? And so, yeah, as long as I was getting it equally in both ears, then I would feel that I was all right. They are and they call it a not-for-profit. I always used to prefer to call it a not-for-dividend. You were still out to make a profit because that profit is next year's investment, but not-for-dividend, where you were giving it away to shareholders and what have you. What they do is most of it was done on debt. So it was raising bonds, you weren't paying dividends, but you were paying the interest on the debt. So that was a much better way. I always felt that was a much better way, because they nearly went under in the first few years. That was their problem. They were not commercially as viable as some of the other firms. So going on to this public ownership, not-for-profit way was a more realistic way of doing it. But I think they've still been caught by the same problem of not being able to raise their charges fast enough to be able to keep on top of investment. Well, I moved up here in 76, January the 1st. It was a storm that night, actually. They had a lot of damage at the, was it the cooperative greenhouses that used to be out at, was it around Sutton St Nicholas, that sort of area? Yeah, a lot of damage to those the day I arrived. It was, but as I was sort of explaining, that because of the movements within the Water Authority, they fetched in a lot of youngsters. So I've almost got a replay of Mum and Dad moving to Horwich with a whole host of other youngsters and getting on the estate. There were an awful lot of youngsters coming into the water industry in Hereford. So, you know, there's a couple of others coming into water resources in Hereford where we were. But Welsh Water had also set up new admin processes, so it had its own new legal team. The engineers had fetched new people in. So it meant that there was a lot of youngsters in the buildings, because they weren't in one building, they were all over, and they all needed some sort of social life. So they would get together, and there'd be the cricket matches and what have you, and the Skittles nights and where are we? And Jan had been employed as the article clerk by Welsh Water in the Y division, and that's where I met her at, I think it was a, well, we've debated this. I'm pretty sure that we met at a union meeting, because Nalgo was still a strong beast in the on the playing field at the time. And having not long come out of college, where it was all student politics anyway, then you'd get involved in the trade union. And it was an Nalgo meeting, probably to discuss the branch's stance on all the different motions that were going to come up at the National Executive Meeting. I'm sure the National Executive Meeting was trembling to wait to hear what Hereford branch of Nalgo from the water industry had to say. But you went through it all. It was what you did. I mean, we're in the days of Red Robbo at Ford and at British Leyland, rather, and you know, they were a force to be reckoned with at the time. So yeah. It came from there. Married in 77. Claire arrived in 79. James in 82. So James never met his granddad. My dad died in February 81. That's when he was 60. So he'd met Claire, but he never met James. And we'd moved to Luston, just outside Leominster, with Claire. James was born whilst we were at Luston. And Jan had done a lot of conveyancing during her training and with Welsh Water, as well as prosecuting polluters. She'd done prosecuting of polluters as for the Water Authority in those days. But she'd given up work when we had the two kids. But there was a shortage of conveyancing solicitors in Leominster. And people had learned that Jan had done some conveyancing, so they'd come and ask her if she'd do it. And I think James in particular was being a particular pain at the time. So it was almost a relief when I'd come home in an evening that she could go and do some thinking and constructive stuff. And I'd have the kids, because she'd have them all day and done nothing but baby talk. And now she could talk to adults and get the brain turning properly. And in the early days, she was doing the conveyancing, and people would fetch a couple of wine glasses or whatever, and it sort of kept growing, and they were no longer just friends who were coming to have a bit of conveyancing. It was friends of friends of friends of, you know, it was getting more and more distant. And we said, actually, you could actually make a go of this. So Jan was doing more of that from home. But where we lived at Luston was, and Luston pretty much is a single road through the village. Well, as you were going through the village, our house wasn't on the main drag. It was a separate driveway that went between two houses. And if you didn't know that it went to a third house, you wouldn't recognise it. And we're in the days before mobile phones and what have you. So you'd end up with clients finding the phone box in Luston saying, well, I'm here, but I can't find you, type of thing. So we said, if you're going to do this more seriously, then customers not being able to find you is not a good start. So we'd probably be as well moving to Leominster, and that would also save Jan having to, when she wanted to fetch cheques to pay into the bank, or mail that had to go in the post to go off to solicitors elsewhere, have to put two kids in the car, drive them into Leominster, two kids out the car, off to the post office, off to the bank, you know. So eventually we found Church Street, and that was pure fluke. I used to fetch Claire into a nursery that was held in the Priory Rooms a couple of mornings a week. So perhaps it was Tuesday and Thursday, something like that. I'd fetch her in on the way to work, so 8:30, something like that. And then Jan would come and collect her at 12 o'clock or so. And I drove in one day and there was a for sale sign on this house. And so when I got into work, I rang Jan up and said, well, your house is for sale, that you need to find out what's, get some details about it, and we'll take it on from there. So that's how we came to move into number 24, and that was in November 1983. So that's what, 42 years ago, coming up now. So yeah.